previously on WandaVision.
Welcome and or welcome back to I Want My MCU TV, an incomparable podcast that takes a look at the different TV shows in the Marvelverse. With me are Kelly Gamont.
Howdy, howdy.
Don Melton.
Yo.
And I'm Lisa Schmeiser. Now, those of you who have listened to this podcast before know that we kind of have a groove we like to hang in that we think of as the three R's. The first R, recap. We recap an episode. Then, after we recap the episode, we react to the episode, which is where the bulk of our nerding out takes place. You know, we riff, we talk. And then our third section is a sequence called Really? Which is where Kelly and I are schooled in the ways of old school Marvel by Professor Don, since he has quite the recall of Marvel's back catalog, and what Don doesn't know, his sister does. And it sounds like his sister's been calling him to give him a few refreshers, too.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. Anyway, that's our usual format. But for the first time since January, there were no new Marvel shows waiting for us on Disney Plus yesterday.
We got nothing.
So we're going to actually do a little bit of a meta discussion today. And then we're going to take a quick break before we come back right before Loki begins on June 11th. So you heard it, meta discussion, then quick break, and then we'll be back doing our thing for Loki. And what we're going to do today is this is like the final exam. Like, we've been through a semester of Marvel television at this point. We're at the essay exam, and we have to answer three central questions. The first question I thought it'd be fun for all of us to discuss is whether or not each show succeeded in picking up its character and getting them to where they really needed to be by the end of the show. In other words, was there a hero or heroine's journey and arc? Was it successful? How did it get there? What did we think of the trip? The second thing I wanted to ask was, how successful were the shows in making their themes known to the viewers and then executing on those themes? There's a discussion to be had about how successfully these shows actually delivered on the thematic premises they set up. And then the final question we're going to ask and answer tonight is, did these shows actually need to exist? Did we need to have these journeys laid out over the course of 6 to 9 episodes, or could it have been movies? And we'll make a case for or against, depending. So, three questions, three people on a podcast. Let's get to it. All right. To recap, it always starts with a recap. To recap, our first question that we were going to ask and answer is, do we think one or both of these shows successfully got their main characters where they needed to be by the final episode of their series? In other words, do we think that Wanda got to where she needed to be as a character over the course of WandaVision? Were we surprised where she ended up?
I think there was a little surprise from what we were thinking perhaps in the beginning, but by mid show, you know, by the fourth or fifth episode, we could see the end coming. And so when she got there, that was pretty obvious what was, well, I don't want to say obvious, but it was a pretty appropriate where she got. There were some nice twists at the end, mm-hmm. with, you know, her in the cabin and stuff like that. But I think that made sense for the character. The thing that was unexpected was where Vision wound up. So that was the delight to me, mm-hmm. In the sense that I was much more surprised about
it. Well, Don, you bring up an interesting point, because a lot of the external chatter about WandaVision, and I think a lot of our talk too, was along the real villain is grief. And yeah. And Wanda's journey through grief, and she's using television as a displacement and coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. But it strikes me, because I live with somebody who's just begun a rewatch, In rewatching the episodes, it strikes me that the parallel origin story that we're seeing is Vision 2.0, because you have this character who's tremendously warm and empathetic, and when you first see him, he's just like, he's the illustration of uxorious in the dictionary. And over the course of the series, you see him continue to ask more and more questions, and finally he's like, who am I? How did I get here? What does it mean that you could create me out of your memories? How much of me is me, and how much of me is your projection of me? And the way he finally answers that with the Ship of Theseus thing, I think that arc is I found it unexpectedly satisfying.
Yeah, and I hate to say this, in some ways, it was more satisfying or interesting than Wanda's own journey.
Well, it was interesting because we don't, like, for the most part, I'll say, by and large, lots of folks have been through Wanda's journey. Now, maybe not in quite such hextastic fashion. Not everybody has an ancient witch who beat the Salem witch trials, you know, hanging out down the block, but almost all of us basically have gone through this in some fashion. We've all lost somebody, or, you know, whether it's because that person died or something happened, you know, and the relationship has ended and we no longer have access to whoever that person is. It was very dear to us. And so we've kind of all been down Wanda's journey in this show. And, you know, like, talk about an intergalactic coping mechanism, right? So, like, you know, like, that was sort of an interesting thing to watch as a person who's experienced it. And watching Vision have his journey in the same, like, I really wasn't expecting that when he when we get to the 80s and he and they have that sort of showdown before Ralph shows up. Like, in, like, when we get there and all of a sudden it turns out that, you know, like, almost in a way, Vision's been the chick in this whole thing the whole time. You know, I'm an accessory to the story, and nothing that I do matters except in relation to the main character. And so when he starts kind of going, you're not going to put me in a fridge, like, that, I was more surprised by that. It was very satisfying to watch, especially because we got Snow Vision, and, you know, like, whatever all of that is going to mean. So I don't know, I feel like, I don't know if they got her to, I don't know if she got by the end of the series where she meant to be, because I don't know where she's meant to be yet. We don't know that until next year. But I definitely feel like we watched her move through this whole process and get to a new place at the end of it. Like, absolutely. And there's a whole bunch of, like, meta commentary and all of this about how it was very interesting for Marvel to kick off with their streaming TV stuff with TV shows, and something very based on TV shows and rooted in tropes and comfort viewing, and you know, we're gonna take our cast and crew who grew up on Family Ties and all these things, and we're gonna go build the house that's basically the Family Ties house, and we're gonna shoot a sitcom there,
and doing something completely unexpected and unlike any other Marvel show, any other Marvel movie, or even other Marvelverse shows. It was just a hard left turn into Weirdville,
and I loved it.
Well, one of the things I remember,
we had nothing but wonderful things to say about it, obviously. Yeah. But I really appreciated that that was where they started with their streaming properties.
Yeah, which was not their original intention, by the way.
No, originally it was supposed to be Falcon and Winter Soldier. One of the things that Jason Snell once said about the Marvel movies, which I have found to be a tremendously useful rubric for looking at all of them, is that each movie, the whole point to a Marvel movie is you've got your Marvel formula and you've got a genre formula, and you just kind of mash them up. And, you know, like, Thor Ragnarok is a road trip movie. And Ant-Man, both Ant-Man movies are caper movies. You know, things like that. And so one of the things I found charming and interesting about WandaVision is it's basically taking this idea, which is comfortable and familiar to MCU people. And it's taking these TV tropes, which are comfortable and familiar to people who are not MCU people. And then it just kind of twists everything by 45 degrees. And I know it wasn't their first choice for TV shows to come out, but in a way it was extraordinarily good timing because it really announced what Marvel's whole strategy is going to be for TV, which is, we're going to take some conventions, but we're going to again, Marvel-fy them as you do.
Yeah. So. I mean, talk about fortuitous though, to start your, I know about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I know about Daredevil. I know the Netflix stuff. I know Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But for this to be the first fully integrated within, in-house Disney.
Yeah, because now there were some executive shenanigans.
Yeah.
That hurt the earlier series. And just veer for a moment. I don't feel like viewers should have to know this much about streaming. I don't think viewers should ever have to know this much about any company's legal agreements when it comes to what streams and what can't. And I also don't think viewers should have to know much about any company's executive structure and who's in charge of what. Like, you shouldn't have to do background reading in the Hollywood Reporter just to get the full context for what you're watching. And I think it's ridiculous that we have somehow made this a baseline thing.
I've got my scholarly degree in that, so of course
that's true.
I love that. But I completely agree with that. I also don't think it should be necessary that you should have, as a friend of mine was discussing in a Slack earlier today, watched all of the Marvel movies in order, in the proper phases and everything else, and have substantial portions of the dialogue memorized.
Yeah.
I mean, that shouldn't be
a requirement.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
So this is actually one of the things that I think WandaVision did really, really well.
Which is very self-enclosed.
Yeah, exactly. What I was going to say is, for all of that, Doctor Strange is going to show up, or this is going to happen and this is going to tie in. it really resisted that, up until about the last minute. And when they did have tie-ins, it was with third tier characters. I'm glad we had Darcy and Jimmy and Monica. I think that's great because I have warm feelings. But to be frank, you could have had three completely new and original characters and the series would have worked just fine.
It would have been, yeah.
And I think that's a strength.
It only matters if you watched the other stuff. And that's the part that's important. Yeah.
That said, to answer the question I actually asked, I was really, I'm not sure I liked the final episode as much as a lot of other people seem to.
WandaVision.
I recognize it did everything it should to move pieces into place and this and that and all the other, but what we had learned over the course of 8 episodes is you had this tremendously isolated, deeply traumatized, grieving young woman who's got a maladaptive grief strategy, and at the end of it, still traumatized, still grieving, and now dealing with the knowledge that she is an extraordinarily superpowered magical being as opposed to just a person who happened to be a lab rat. And I get that we had to get her to the point where she is the Scarlet Witch. I get that that was the whole point of the series, and that Agnes/Agatha, who's played by Catherine Hahn, is fantastic. It was a lot of fun in the show. Part of me is did we need that in the show as much as we had it? Or was it just an entertaining way to get Wanda into full-blown Scarlet Witch mode because they need her to be the Scarlet Witch for future plot developments?
I think there's a lot more to the latter than we would like to think as fans. But that, I'm okay with that, because if that was the destination, what a way
to
take
get
us on a journey. And for the last episode, they had me at the ship of Theseus.
Yeah.
I mean, I was okay, this is the best thing ever. So I also think that they had to get the Vision back.
Mm-hmm.
And they also had to introduce us to Monica. That was the third.
So you're saying the show had three missions. One was to get Wanda positioned as the Scarlet Witch. Number two is to get Double Vision out in the world, doing his walkabout or whatever the synthesoid version of the walkabout is.
Yeah, the white Vision back. It's resurrecting Vision. Yeah.
And then number three is to superpower Monica Rambeau and get her to space. And the show plausibly delivered on all three, because you have two of those three people dealing with grief, and their grief propels them to literally redefine themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's just the difference is that Monica does not put a bubble around people when she does.
Valid.
I also think this whole thing dealing with grief and loss was very timely when the show dropped, because let's be honest,
pandemic, we were reeling from that.
Bingo. And people were just dying left and right. And there was probably not a viewer in existence that was not hit by that loss issue recently. So even though it was not Marvel's intention for this to go first, holy crap. What?
Talk about fortuitous.
Yeah, just they rolled. A couple of sixes there. That was the way to go. And frankly, and we've talked about this before in our for the second show, they certainly got the plaudits for it critically and otherwise, for the most part. I mean, and they got a lot of attention for it. Yeah. So that was a good way to launch a streaming service. And Disney Plus, I mean, they still have people working overtime counting their money.
Oh, sure.
So, from both of these shows. So, I'd say it was a success on that end. If Marvel wanted to make some money, duh.
Mission accomplished.
So speaking of, let's segue now to ask the same questions about Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Captain America and the Winter Soldier. We're literally, the whole point to this series was over the course of six episodes to move Sam from being the Captain America sidekick who gets handed the shield to somebody who defines Captain America for himself, recognizes himself as Captain America, and more importantly, makes it clear that he doesn't care if anyone else recognizes him as Captain America because he's claiming it.
Yep.
And then we also have Bucky's journey over the course of this series, which is Bucky goes from somebody who, like, I guess the question I have for you is, number one, did these guys move from point A to point B? Like, was the shift in the credits from Falcon and the Winter Soldier to Captain and America and the Winter Soldier, was that earned for you? Like, did that make sense to you? And then number two, thing is, what I want to find out is who went on a longer trip really to get from point A to point B.
Well, I don't think of it in terms of distance. I think of it in terms of the amount of change and the catharsis that was needed. Right. And I think Sam edged out Bucky there, but if there's one failing the show had for me is they didn't focus enough on that catharsis for Bucky. It would be great if it was named Captain America and Bucky at the end instead of the Winter Soldier.
Thank you. That's what I was thinking. 'Cause I hate that he still has the Winter Soldier label.
That's the one thing I didn't like, but he is clearly not the Winter Soldier anymore.
Yeah.
I also think it's not just about their journeys, because it's not just about journeys. I think it's also Zemo, and learning to dance. But it's,
learning it's to his, dance like no one is watching.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
It's the reintroduction of Agent 13. And it is the introduction of U.S. Agent and Val, the Contessa.
Yeah.
And so I think you know, that those were the chess moves. You know, you have to think about this as a chess game, right?
Oh yeah.
And this is about developing pieces, right?
Mm-hmm.
For not even the end game yet, the middle game. So you're getting the players out, you know.
Yeah.
You're getting the pieces out on the board and the center of the board to do some things. And that's what the series to me was about. It was like mm-hmm. setting up the next Captain America movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's about setting up the Black Widow movie.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's about setting up something else that we have no idea what the hell it is right now.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, this is a good question. Is, do you feel between the two movies, which one do you think had to do more heavy lifting in terms of setting up future installments?
Probably the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, because there was just a lot more characters there that they had to develop.
I figured,
and they had to do it in 2/3 the number of episodes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm gonna say it was WandaVision, because WandaVision spent 4 episodes not giving us any sort of character setup for most things.
Mm-hmm.
We incidentally got Agatha out of all of that, but she wasn't like a major character in the sitcoms. So we had like 4 solid episodes of sitcoms,
mm-hmm.
and then we had, I think, 5 episodes of that were like one in between, and then 4 episodes of just the show and not the sitcom piece. So I feel like they didn't have as much time to work with.
Mm.
So, and the thing that's interesting, and Lisa, you and I talked about this on The Incomparable, mm-hmm. When we talked about this the other day, that a lot of times what we find in streaming shows, a very common complaint in streaming TV is you gave me X episodes,
mm-hmm.
whatever that number is, and you really needed to give me X minus 2.
Yeah.
Netflix all the time. It's like I you know, you could have given me, you know, and like we, I think what we talked about with this one was that it was like if each episode had maybe 5 or 10 minutes more of something, mm-hmm. then we would have had a much more complete picture in all of this. And so like at times Falcon and the Winter Soldier still sounds weird to me.
Yeah.
At times,
you know, you can call it whatever you please. I'm reasonably sure anyone listening to this podcast knows that,
you know,
it's the Falcon and the Snowman, or it's the Falcon, the Witch in the Wardrobe, or really it's Captain America's Technicolor shield coat. It's just, you know.
Well, as the editor of I Want My MCU TV, I'm here to tell you, we talked more than one of our episodes ended up being overstuffed because the episode of Finding Zemo we were talking about was overstuffed.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah,
so much stuff happens, and I'm fine with that. I would much rather have this than you really could have given me 2 fewer episodes. Yeah. But I feel like sometimes it made it sort of hard, and especially because, like, on a meta level, again, we know that there was some hasty rewriting happening, and so there was an occasional off ramp to nowhere and things like that.
Actually, it turns out the director, Kerry Skoglund, and others have confirmed that the whole pandemic storyline and all the other stuff they talked about it this week, that mm-hmm. never existed. The rewriting and stuff like that, and it's
so it was always meant to be this.
Yeah, this was all intentional.
Interesting. Okay. Interesting, because some of it does feel a little rewritten. I was
maybe I'm forgiving a lot more stuff than I should be forgiving, because I sort of thought that they ended up with some mayhem in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there were a couple of there were some minor rewrites to get around
mm-hmm.
a couple of other things, but the whole thing about a major storyline being deleted and ADR being done to cover up stuff
okay.
Skoglund, she was very clear about that. It's like, nope.
Mm.
And so were
thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, yeah, so were some of the actors. In fact, the other person who confirmed this was Danny Ramirez, you know, who played Torres.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he was like,
not in any of the scripts I read. Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Well, and let's take a minute and talk about how, like, if Bucky doesn't end up getting over himself, we might get another episode of The Falcon and the Winter Snowman. Although it might be the Millennial Falcon and the Winter Snowman.
Oh my goodness, you kids today. Well, I think...
I sort of love the dynamic, though, of, like, I know it's not Sam, but, like of Bucky getting to be, like, weapons-grade cranky old man with Danny. I feel like that might be really fun, given what he how he does it to Sam. I just think it might be kind of fun.
Well, yeah, to get back to... because I hadn't had a chance to weigh in. What you guys have reminded me is the Falcon and the Winter Soldier had to move so many more pieces into place than WandaVision did. WandaVision, like we point out, WandaVision has to set up three characters for future installments. But what this show had to do is it effectively had to say, yeah, we've thrown out the Avengers playbook because we're living in a we're living in a post-blip world. So that's big move number one. Big move number two is we need a new Captain America. Big move number three is we need to set up at least a couple of big bads. And then big move number four is we also have to completely rehabilitate Bucky. Big move number five is we have to set up both Wakanda and Zemo for a post-blip. And although they don't say it, a post-T'Challa reality.
Yes.
That's, I mean, that felt a little unacknowledged, but also we didn't get a whole lot of Wakanda.
I mean, look, I'm sure Shuri has a notebook too. So, like, she's probably like, she's probably like, I have my brother's to-do list. Rest assured, this is taken care of.
Oh, for sure.
Like, Wakandans have long memories, but there were so many things that had to happen in this show. They had only had 66% of the episodes that WandaVision had to get from point A to point B. Yeah. And, you know, we had said in previous podcasts, we hadn't seen a lot of critical appraisal or assessment of the show. And I feel like that changed in the last week because I read like eight different pieces that are out there. Yeah. This show didn't quite deliver. And I was like, really?
What show were you watching?
Well, and that's actually something I wanted to bring up too, is in case it's not evident to listeners of this podcast, none of us are millennials.
I'm not even close.
Maybe you count as two millennials chronologically. I don't know.
Perhaps three.
A lady never asks the ages. But
there you go.
Like what I'm reminded of with some of the feedback that I've seen with Falcon and the Winter Soldier, where they're like, oh, you know, Sam, because one of the pieces I wrote was Sam Wilson shouldn't want to be Captain America because it's, you know, an inherent, because America itself has racism baked in. And if you're advancing American interests, you're not really deconstructing and reckoning with that. That's actually not an argument I feel remotely qualified to address. But what some of the reactions do remind me of is the reality that the people who are writing and making some of these TV shows are firmly in the Gen X and above cohorts, because Gen X happens to be the age right now where they are the ones who are greenlighting projects, and they are the ones who are showrunners, and they are the ones who are running writers' rooms. Like, they've done 20 years in the trenches, and now it's their turn to run something.
And it's Gen X. It's not old boomer farts like me. I mean, those,
but here's
most of those have died out.
But like, here's the thing. Even if you're like, oh, I'm coming at this from a very fresh and progressive angle, you're still coming at it from an angle that feels fresh and progressive to you relative to what you grew up with or what you thought your baseline normal was. That baseline is very, very different for people who are in their people who are not yet of legal age or are in their 20s or early 30s now. It's the same reason why, like, when I went to see Ghostbuster with some girlfriends, we were all like, oh, what a refreshing, relaxing movie. Just, you know, four women getting together and fighting ghosts. And it's so great. And I knew a lot of younger women and men too, but a lot of younger women who are like, no, the movie needed to be good in addition to being about women, because like their experience with media is different than my experience growing up. Yeah. And I think we're seeing a little bit of that with the MCU TV stuff, because the things that we get excited about are things that feel really fresh to us in terms of TV and franchises and superheroes, but they may feel pretty old hat to people who grew up with a completely different set of references.
Well, and we talked about that at one point because you were talking about being excited about the women being butt kickers.
Yeah.
And your daughter was like, so I have She-Ra and.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and all I think, these other things. And like, and I remember like, you know, watching Wonder Woman and coming out of that, like I could take over the world because.
And you're like, the Amazons are great. Yeah. Yeah. And meanwhile, people are like, yeah, are they there? But I wonder if the Falcon and the Winter Soldier didn't have a little bit of that, where internally and for some audience segments, it is a big flipping deal that Captain America is now a black dude, and more importantly, a black dude who made the U.S. government take responsibility for its previous misdeeds and then do restorative justice. Like, to us, that feels big, but to other people, that's the starting line.
And, oh yeah, that's, you know, table stakes, as they say, I think. And the thing about that that stands out to me when I like in considering that is that like I felt like it wasn't it felt like Sam kind of figured it out, because I don't know what it was that made him say it, but there was a point when he said he wasn't fighting for America, he was fighting for the idea of it, which is exactly the same thing that Steve used to say. And it wasn't because Steve used to say it, it's because when Sam says it, it hits different.
Yeah, because this is somebody who has a completely different lived experience of America, so his idea feels different, it comes from a different place.
And so for him to say he's fighting for an American ideal, while it's the same words as Steve, it's a very different sentiment. And that was the thing that I sort of appreciated about it, was because it was absolutely on his terms. Sam's not doing anybody a favor by taking this over and taking this on, and he even admits that. I was very glad to hear the part when he's like, I know there's people gonna hate this. And they're hating it right now, and I can't let it stop me. And I really appreciated that moment.
Well, I was on a podcast for agents of Smooch.
Yes,
where we talk. Yeah, no, that's like radically outside my comfort zone, which is actually one of the reasons I did it. And I was lucky enough to be on it with Amanda Gorman, I think it is Amanda Gorman. And the reason I was lucky enough to meet her and be on the podcast with her is she's a black woman who's really into like Regency fashion and fandom.
Yes.
And she's got like a Twitter thing that's fire. And at the end of the Bridgerton podcast, she's like, I just want to make racists mad all day, every day. And
And I'm going to admit that was part of what I liked about WandaVision, was that there was no actual comic book villain for people to be like.
But what I think is what I like about Sam is Sam is like, I don't know, make racists mad, and I'm okay with that. Like, be mad, you know, you get to be racist and angry. Good for you.
can I make a comment,
Please.
Perhaps a rather long one about and go back to the generational thing? Because I think that take on the generational thing is all crap.
Oh, okay.
Because it's all crap. Because I don't think it's all about the Gen X take is not hitting the young people the right way. I just don't see that at all. Because even though I'm an old fart, I do talk to some people quite a bit younger than me.
Talk to the youngs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so... I don't think they're seeing it the same way. And I think some of the reaction that we're getting is not about that generational thing at all. Okay. It's about some of the themes that they're talking about, and where people are pushing back. This gets to the whole point about I could make racists mad all day. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier leaned hard in to the what it means to be a black man, or really a black person in the world right now. And I think that hit and was resonant no matter what generation you're in. And I think that meant something to people, especially people not like me, because I'm an old white guy. But talking to some other people, it's like, yeah, that's, we needed that. And I think the young people realize that some of these shows, this is not exactly where we want to be, but we got to take steps. So that's why I'm not buying the generational thing. I think that's just crap.
Okay. Okay.
Sorry.
No, it's good to have it. It would be a really That's boring podcast if we were all in like sycophantic agreement on things. So this is a fun what if exercise. And we should return to what if when the Marvel what if series returns. Yeah. But what I wonder, as you pointed out, Dawn, WandaVision hit at a moment of profound national grief when in a lot of ways it felt like our grief was not even being denied, much less addressed. You know, we didn't have any national symbol for the scope and breadth of our loss until like January 19th when they had that those lights on the mall, on the National
yeah.
Mall.
Yeah.
That was the first national recognition we've had of the scope of a plague that's killed more than 500,000 of our fellow country people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this show came on when our grief didn't have any acknowledgement at all.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, the Falcon and the Winter Soldier comes on right as we as a country are busy grappling with things like the sedition of January 6th.
Bingo.
And the symbols, the way people are fighting over the symbols of what it means to be American, or who gets to be American, and what does it mean to want to believe in this country? Like, these are all questions we're all still working out. And this show hits right in the middle of it. And my big what if is, what if none of that were happening? how would these shows hit? And I don't have an answer, but I can't help but wonder.
That is an excellent question. And yeah. I don't have an answer either. And
yeah,
that's significant. That's
definitely an interesting thought exercise, to be sure. Yeah.
So and maybe that's something we just percolate on, because I'm sure there'll be a break between Loki and other shows. And if you guys who are listening, if you have answers on Twitter where you're like, this is how I think it would work because of this factor that we haven't addressed, oh my God, share them with us, because this is something I don't think we can answer in an hour, but it's a question I can't stop thinking about.
We have access to the Twitter account, and so if you want to talk to us, mm-hmm. And you have a Twitter account as well, you can hit us up on Twitter. We will happily engage. If you are a member of the Incomparable, you can hit us up in the member Slack. That's one of the membership membership benefits.
We all lurk there. I lurk there all the time, even though you hardly ever see me.
Sign me and I will respond. Yeah, anybody in that Slack will tell you that the minute I'm at signed, I will show up and address whatever's going on.
Yes.
I'm like Beetlejuice that way.
But you only have to do it once instead of three times, and Lisa won't make you get married.
Well, I'm extremely efficient.
it's super, but like it's definitely a thing to consider. And like part of what I have appreciated about the podcast is that I don't feel very competent to talk about it if I only watched it once. So I've been watching it again and sort of sitting with that. And particularly like the conversation right before the training montage, when we get Sam and Bucky playing catch with the shield and listening to them have that conversation. And he's like, you know, Steve and I didn't know what we were doing when we gave it to you. We had no idea. And to have him, to have them have that sort of frank conversation, I felt like was like, I've never seen that on TV before. That's not TV I grew up watching. Yeah. And it was really great to see. Like, a thing that I remember sometimes, like, you know, in the grand scheme of things, every once in a while I'll be reading some article or something and it'll say, another wonderful feature of this person is that they were too racist for something in the 80s. Think about that. And then you kind of think, go like,
sorry.
Wow. No, that's the right reaction. It's like, wow, how is that possible? And then like you go back and you look and you're like, wow, oh yeah, that's right. And so like, you know, like you said, Lisa, like people who grew up with people growing up with the media diet of your daughter are going to have a very different reaction to some of this stuff, I think. I agree with Dawn, it may not necessarily be like, yeah, we know, you know, like you know, like, I just don't think, like, it's not going to be novel to people younger than me.
And but the so, other thing like, is to keep in
I
mind
come down
as,
between you.
Yeah, with as white people here, which we have
yeah, all of this comes with the asterisk of yeah. Right. We're not going to tell you how old we are, but so, we're all three white people.
But the thing is, from the getting back to the perspective of black people, I mean, George Floyd died almost a year ago this last week.
Yeah,
his death and that impact, that is not a generational thing either.
No, that's a societal thing. That's a
bingo.
That's an bingo. Everybody. Yeah.
Right. Yep. And I think that no matter what your age as a contributor to this wonderful fiction that we're describing here, you can tap into that angst and that discomfort and turn it over and examine it in exactly like the scene that, and I'm so glad you brought that up, Kelly, which was, it was marvelously uncomfortable and awkward and unpleasant.
But I think that's what I like about Bucky.
Yes.
Is this entire series. Like, you want to talk about, you know, we just talked about how WandaVision, we had the primary Wanda arc, but Vision also had his own character arc that was in its way just as remarkable. And if Sam is Wanda, then Bucky is Vision in this one. And what I love is how every single episode he's made uncomfortable and he just like puts his head down and soldiers through. Like, that's a form of penance. And that's also like a personality trait. It's really like going into this, I'm like, oh God, Bucky. Like, I could, I could not have cared less for the character. Literally the only time I ever liked him in any of the previous movies is when he picks up Rocket and they do the gun spray move in Avengers Infinity War. Like, that was the number one only time I was vaguely amused or entertained by Bucky.
Let me just say, and nerd.
But now I'm like a fan because we finally get to dig into him as a character and we see him doing the work and sitting with his discomfort and trying really hard to figure out, like, what does he do with it? And I liked that we did that. What I'm super curious about, you guys, is what does this portend for Bucky in future Marvel properties?
Woof. Mm-hmm. No clue.
Exactly. And I'm excited by that. I like not knowing.
This is true. What I certainly hope is they didn't do all this work and this development with him to not use the character or the actor, who I think is Sebastian Stan, is just marvelous. I think so.
I love him. I don't remember if we talked about it, but there's I think I might have mentioned it on the Incomparable episode about the whole show, that there's a video of Anthony Mackie and Sebastian Stan, and they're having like a compliment off where they like each have to say something nice about each other, and it is the best thing. So, like, set a reminder, like, 11 o'clock Monday morning to go find it.
Yeah.
And it will make the whole rest of your day immeasurably better. It's so good. I've watched it a bunch of times.
Do you think we should
be so happy just to watch them?
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to question number two, because I feel like we've done a pretty good job.
No, wait a minute. That was only question number one that we did?
Yes. So I'm thinking maybe.
You're so screwed for
you know what? Let's no. So, all right.
Lightning round.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I'm actually making an editorial decision here. I am going to say, let's skip the thematic stuff, because I feel like we kind of went into that a little bit when we talked about the characters. You can't separate characters from themes, after all. And
we hit on a lot of that already.
Yeah. What I want to do now, let's wrap this up by having a lively discussion about whether or not these TV shows actually needed to be TV shows or if they could have been movies.
Absolutely TV.
I said discussion, not one word sentences.
Well,
I'm teasing.
I gotta go with Kelly on that, because I don't think you could do this kind of development and get this many pieces in place with a movie unless it's a super Avengers Endgame. Like, we're talking, you know, a Schneider cut
version. Give me
I don't want a 4-hour movie.
I don't need a Snyder cut. I did need a Zemo cut. Hashtag turns out I totally needed the Zemo cut. And thank you, Disney, for releasing that. But I feel like, even though we talked about it being, you know, a little overstuffed, I really appreciated the space they got for this that they wouldn't have gotten in a movie, because it feel, and I don't know if this is like, I'm sure this is not how Marvel goes about it or anything, but it still feels like just a TV show. And I don't think they would have given Sam and Bucky this sort of story arc in a film. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because the films are the other thing is, and the TV show is like optional reading, I guess. And mm-hmm. so I don't think it would have made as much sense. And I don't think we would have gotten all that we got, all of those little moments, all of those small things. Mm-hmm. Bucky introducing himself to Sarah, mm-hmm. you know, like all of that, all of the fun little bits around the edges, all the garnish.
That's not just on the cutting room floor in a movie. That is, they didn't even bother to film it in a movie.
Yeah.
But more importantly, for WandaVision, let's go back to WandaVision. Mm-hmm. WandaVision just would not have worked as a movie.
No.
A movie is an antithesis of what they were trying to do, for God's sake. It had to be TV for that show.
Why do you say that? Why do you say that you couldn't have had Wanda? Why couldn't it have been a puzzle box movie where for like half an hour it's basically the Truman Show, and then it's like, oh my god, she's actually trapped in a bubble.
Yes, you could do that part, but it wouldn't be steeped in the irony and love for television as a medium if you did it as a film. I mean, it kind of misses the whole point.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think, you know, I could see maybe because Falcon and the Winter Soldier was shorter. You do just hellacious cuts and ruin characters and screw it all up, but it would work as a movie, right? WandaVision, no, that just does not work. Certainly not for the first four episodes. That has to be TV.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think so too. And I think I don't think WandaVision would have worked at all, even if you were able to come at it sideways somehow, because it doesn't have, because you don't have the additional context of, I sit down every Friday night and watch this show on TV.
Ah, because you don't have that parasocial relationship where you've built them into your, routine. And so it's part of
And like, you know, I watch it at 8 o'clock and you watch at 6:30 and, you know, Don watches at noon because he's, you know, an international man of mystery and whatever. But like, we all have our own deals.
That is so not even close to the truth.
See, Don, you say that, but I just finished editing the last episode where you went, I drew some underground comics back in the day, and like lobbed that little grenade right into the middle of a conversation.
Sorry. Humble brag there.
Yeah. Don't sit here like you're not, cause you kind of are. So the thing about WandaVision being what it was that also like she was experiencing everything through TV, so were we. And I feel like that was never going to be there was never going to be another format for that. Ever. And you know, like I said, the stuff that like the little bits of stuff that we all fell in love with from the show, like Don said, they wouldn't have even shot that. And the stuff that we really, really love would have been the small moments. And we wouldn't have gotten anywhere near the payoff on any of these things. Mm. We would have been way less invested in Sam. Lisa, you still wouldn't give a single F about Bucky at the end of it. You know,
that's totally true. That is the best point.
I already have
there,
characters
Kelly.
To care about in the MCU. I don't need more.
And that's what I mean. Like, they'd just be another. It would just be like, these are all the JV guys from the movies. You know, like I called them before.
Would they have even done the second episode with as much depth in Falcon and the Winter Soldier, the Star Spangled Man?
Mm-hmm.
No,
I mean that introduction of the character is just it's just stunningly good. It's just so much depth to this, is he a good guy, is he a bad guy thing. And that whole episode is, here's what we're going to do. We are going to screw with you so much over this whole series. Mm-hmm. And that was delightful. That was all, and it's hard to do that in a movie. You do that in a movie, you've got to hit all the notes right. It has to be exactly right.
the other thing is, and this is the problem with Marvel movies. I mean, Marvel movies are pre-vised to death even before a director is hired for them. Right?
So explain for our audience at home what you mean by pre-vised to death.
Oh, sorry, sorry. Yeah, mm-hmm. sorry. Nerd. Okay. Previs is short for pre-visualization. What mm-hmm. Marvel does is they hire a company called, I think, Third Floor. Mm-hmm. And they've worked with them for like over 10 years now. And what they do is they get the rough outlines about what a Marvel movie is going to be. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, 10 years ago, what they did was they would do all the big spectacle scenes, right? And they would visualize them with prop characters, very detailed though, in the computer, all computer simulations, getting, you know, the angles correct, getting the action correct, everything. It was like the Bible for the movie. These days they do even more. They will do the quiet moments pre-vised and stuff. The delightful thing about the TV show is they couldn't really do that with every frame of every episode because it costs a lot of money to do that. And
yeah.
It would be even more prohibitively expensive because in the case of the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, it's a 6-hour long movie. Mm-hmm. You know, talk about breaking the bank. I'm sure they pre-vised, like, you know, the fight scene on the trucks, the other fight scenes and stuff, and they trained like crazy for them. I'm sure they did that, but are they going to do that for every element there? No, that just doesn't make any sense. And that doesn't let the actors do what they're really good at. So I think it's really good for Marvel to get out of their comfort zone like this. Who's this? What is her name? The new director they hired. She's the one who won the...
Oh, Chloe Zhao.
Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. There's a... I don't know if it's apocryphal or not, but Kevin Feige just being stunned by her.
Where he's like, you did a sunset and we didn't even need to do special effects. That just happens. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. Almost like he's forgotten that is like how films are made.
And you can do that. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to push back just a little bit because I don't know if it's so much he's forgotten that's how films are made so much as it is that's a part of his visual vocabulary that he's not fluent in anymore. Because
that is a better way to put it.
Because this is a guy who has spent God knows how many hours staring at screens, looking at fight sequences, probably with an eye to asking things like, can we make this look more realistic? And can we make this look both realistic and awesome? And can this be something that doesn't look like every other fight sequence that precedes it, but doesn't look so ridiculous that it's the equivalent of 1,000 pouches and teeny tiny feet when fighting? so, you know, this is a guy who I think probably has a really kinesthetic visual vocabulary and focuses on that. And so to realize that there are other ways of creating a visual vocabulary, that's not something that he's had to think about a whole lot. Whereas one of the strengths that Chloe Zhao brings to her filmmaking is that she really does take a very immersive, atmospheric look at things.
Using that pesky real world.
Yeah, exactly. and so it's two different dialects. It might be similar languages, but it's the difference between Castilian Spanish and Mexican Spanish, or Quebecois French versus the stuff that you'd speak.
Parisian. So
I'm pushing back just a little bit because I don't think it's a matter of book primitive can't appreciate sunsets. I think it's a matter of his visual vocabulary is just a lot different.
Your characterization is much better than mine. So So I, but getting back to the broader point here, it, I think it's really good that they have these TV shows to break them out of that visual vocabulary, to not rely on it as much. And
to not do house style, to have more organic interaction.
Right. I also hope, I got the impression they did, because Kari Skogland directed all the episodes that of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, at least, that I got the impression that they gave her a little bit more leeway, the same way they gave Matt Shakman, who directed all the episodes of WandaVision, you know, that sort of control. And by the way, that's not something that normally happens, having a single director for all the episodes. The last time I remember that happening was the first season of True Detective on HBO.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Breaking out the deep TV knowledge there.
Yeah. So, because normally people don't do that, because it's just, you know, for that length of time, you would make a director's head explode. Mm-hmm. it's really interesting that they did that, made that commitment, but they also gave that control over to someone.
So here's a question I want to bring up as a sub question, since you've both made such great cases for, no, these have to be TV series because you had to have the character beats and it made more sense to move people over 6 hours than to try to give you like an abbreviated road trip in two. Where do you see the line between Marvel movie versus Marvel TV show? How dotted is it? Is it, Would you even say there's a line, or is it mostly like just kind of a suggestion of like a loose net barrier that people cross back and forth over? I guess that maybe another way of asking this question is, what kind of Marvel stories are going to be better suited for TV, and what kind of Marvel stories will work best as movies?
That is such a good question. I have no idea how to answer it. Kelly, save me.
I run a home for this sort of thing. So
Kelly's home for lonesome crackpot theories.
The thing that I wonder is if the Marvel universe had geared up later and Disney Plus had geared up sooner, if what we would have gotten was an Iron Man series and a Hulk series, and a Thor series, and an Avengers movie. And if maybe that's how they would have done it, is that we get all the characters in the TV show, and then, you know, in the final episode of every one, Nick Fury pops up in the credits like, howdy. And then, you know, and then we get the Avengers movies, as opposed to one movie for each of them, and then the Avenger movie. And then we get a few movies about some of them, and then another Avengers movie. I wonder if that would have been the case. And I wonder if that might be sort of what we're getting here, is you don't have to know about WandaVision to watch the next Doctor Strange movie. And I think that's going to always be a thing that Marvel does, regardless of what shape the franchise takes in the future, whether they start just, you know, injecting it into our brains like the Matrix, you know, we all sit down and jack in and like, that was WandaVision, and then we, you know, move on to the next thing. You know, I know the Winter Soldier. That's what I'm wondering about. And I'm hopeful that what they will be able to do with the series we have now is what they were able to do with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where you didn't have to watch it if you were just watching the movies, and you can watch the show and not ever watch any of the movies, and you can have a satisfactory experience either way. You can watch both, and that's great. And there will be little winks and little nods to things. You know, the one that I think of that I feel like was the perfect balance was in the first X-Men movie. When we get the X-Men and like everybody's wearing black, and and like black functional clothing. Mm-hmm. And they're on the plane, I think. And Wolverine says something about like all of them wearing black. And he goes, what? No blue and yellow spandex? And like, that's it. Like, how long ago was that movie? And that line is seared into my brain is like the perfect moment of like Mr. Kelly, who never read any comic books, mm-hmm. like, is like, oh, comic book spandex, haha, right?
Yeah.
But to me, who spent my life reading Wolverine, I'm like, oh, I see what you did there. And that's hilarious. And I love your little wink and nod to like nerds like me sitting here in this theater on opening night. So that's the piece that I'm hopeful that they're going to be able to keep. Just like, you know, at one point I remember hearing an interview with someone at Marvel, I can't remember who, that said, if you watch all the Avengers movies, you get a complete story and you don't have to have watched all the other individual ones in order to enjoy the ones that I'll say Avengers in the name. And so I'm hoping that they're going to be able to do something like that here.
Except for Captain America Civil War, because that really was an Avengers movie.
Yeah. I always think of it as an Avengers movie, to be honest.
So by the way, Kelly's answer is so good that I almost wanted to just say what she said.
Okay.
But I want to add, there's another interesting take on where they could go with the series. And this is the only thing I can think of to add to that marvelous dissertation, which is what that should be. Mm-hmm. Is that it kind of depends on all whether these series are one shots or they do multiple seasons. And it's very clear from WandaVision and Falcon and the Winter Soldier is neither one of those were intended to be multiple season shows. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's possible to WandaVision, and it's obvious from Falcon and the Winter Soldier that this was a stepping off to the movies. But with something like Loki, if mm-hmm. what my guess about the series is going to be correct, you could probably do multiple seasons about his adventures with the Time Variance Authority. I think that could mm-hmm. be a real possibility. So that's the big conundrum as far as I'm concerned, what goes forward here.
Mm. The question is whether this is a series you see once, or if it's a series that where it's like, okay, this is a series that gets us from point A to point B, it's a limited run end of thing, or okay, this is a series that returns every so often and the characters move along and maybe things have changed because movies have come out between the TV show.
Yeah, so it ends up being what I did on my summer vacation. Which I would enjoy. I mean, like, the, you know, is it? Oh, it's Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm. Hawkeye is coming. And I was thinking that might actually be a great example of that, because the first season is clearly, well, you now have a young lady who would like to be a Hawkeye, and old Hawkeye is going to have things to say about that. And then maybe the next few series are young lady Hawkeye is doing her thing, and old mm-hmm. man Hawkeye pops up from time to time. We don't know. So
to tell her to get off the lawn.
Get off my lawn.
What I was thinking was, in Bendis's run on Hawkeye, it mm-hmm. always starts with like something like the intro to every issue was basically like mm-hmm. the Avengers aren't saving the world all the time. This is what Hawkeye's up to on his days off. And then, you know, bro, this looks bad, bro. Mm-hmm. And then we're off to the races. Yeah. By the way, I really, really, really love that run on Hawkeye. Mm-hmm. But maybe we'll talk about that at some point once it's TV. But
well, this is a point where you guys that I can participate in, really, because I have not read those. So,
Don.
Well, you know, I don't read them homework. All. Yeah, I've got homework.
I gave the professor homework. I win at podcast.
Yes.
We have to call it now because Don has comic books to go read. But like, that's the thing that I like when I said what I did on my summer vacation, that's what I'm thinking of, is like, I would love to watch a show about Days Off. I mean, that's what we mm-hmm. just got with Sam and Bucky, sort of. You know, at least initially, like what they were, you know, the other thing that I sort of liked about both of these was that they were not universe changers. Mm-hmm. The world wasn't what was at stake in either of them, and that made me very happy. And that's, I think, part of what I appreciate about getting to watch these on TV, is that They can be high stakes, but they don't have to be intergalactic stakes. They can be high personal stakes. Mm-hmm. And I like that story with these guys too. I mean, you know, like we keep talking about here, you know, we keep banging the aftermath drum. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody wants to talk about what happened the day after Endgame or the day after Infinity War or the day, you know, or the week after. Like, you know, nobody's like contending with any of that. You know, all we see is the highlight reel, basically. And so having the opportunity in these series to do things like that with, you know, Hawkeye on his day off and, mm-hmm. you know, like when WandaVision does have her, I think you called it, Lisa, feelings hangover.
Yes.
Oh, you know, like sweatpants and, mm-hmm. you know, sweatpants and Netflix and like, I mean, it'd be Disney Plus, but you know, sweatpants and Disney Plus and like, I'm just going to sit here and watch every mm-hmm. episode of Clone Wars and eat ice cream until I'm done with mm-hmm. both of those things.
Yeah.
Like that kind of like those would be I want to find out more about these characters. Like, you've given me what is so far for most of them the most interesting iteration I've gotten mm-hmm. of almost everybody in the MCU that we've seen on film so far. Yes, I'm air quoting film. You just can't hear it. mm-hmm. Like, of all of them. And so I really appreciate, like, I want to know what Sam is like. I want to know, like, I wish to know the fate of the Paul and Darlene. Like, they kind of, mm-hmm. that was a big unresolved plot point. I want to know how all this stuff turns out. And I, like, you've given me these other characters that I want to know more about. Mm-hmm. Just like with WandaVision, you know, when we were talking about, you know, having small side characters who could be a whole show, like, mm-hmm. I didn't have a season of Sarah in the Winter Soldier. I mean,
yeah,
you know, yeah. So I think mm-hmm. I think the line will be blurry, because I think if you watch the shows, then you will have some extra knowledge that you can bring to them. But mm-hmm. I don't think it's ever going to turn into the thing that you're talking about, Lisa, where like there's required reading before you show up for class. I don't think we're ever going to get there.
Fingers crossed. Yeah.
Now, of course, nerds like us, nerds like us would do that. But
I mean,
you know, that's not,
we're gonna, like, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
You are literally listening to the product of us doing that. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And Kelly has a moment of meta awareness on the podcast that it's uncomfortably close to home for all of us.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, these were some great answers to some pretty idiotic questions. So thank you for putting up.
No, it's funny. Uh-huh. So I stupidly asked this afternoon on, we were on iMessage. We're on this mile long iMessage thread, folks. I stupidly asked this afternoon.
You wish you were on it. It's pretty great.
Yeah, it's pretty great. Uh-huh. It's and so I realized, oh, we're recording tonight at 7.
Yeah.
One, are we still on? And two, what in the shill are we talking about?
Yeah.
And immediately Lisa comes back with these, like, these bullet points and what we're going to cover.
Oh, it's
like,
I don't know. I was kind of thinking maybe bam, bam, bam. Here's what we should talk about.
And I'm like, that's great. That's the, you know, it all crystallized in my head. And I'm like, like, one, thank God somebody else is thinking about this, because I didn't have a freaking clue. And two, I just totally bought into her voodoo, because it just worked for me. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Worked for me.
Now, this is how you can tell that I've actually like worked in journalism for a little bit, is I'm able to come up with questions. But no, I feel like we are entering a really interesting period, both in the MCU and I think in screen-based entertainment at large, because thanks to binging and infinite digital libraries, and the types of stories that get told, the definitions of movie and TV seem to be shifting a lot.
A whole lot.
And so with that, the kinds of stories, like, you know, serial stories versus episodic ones and ones that rely on continuity versus not, like, all of that is just gonna get tossed up in the air, and it's gonna be super exciting to see where it all lands. And I feel like we're watching a lot of experimentation in action, carefully corporate vetted experimentation, but
oh, for sure,
you know, experimentation nonetheless. So Anyway, you know what, guys? This has been like a great hour of discussion. Let's call it a wrap. We are going to take a little bit of a break before we come back with Loki, and we'll resume our usual recap, react, really segments with that. Maybe have an Owen Wilson quote of the week. I don't know. Anything is possible on this podcast.
Wow.
Maybe we'll add a fourth segment where we just all go, wow, for a few minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm sure he must love that.
Well, we're not saying it to him, but
I would totally do it if I had the opportunity.
Well, if he wanted to come on the show and talk to us about the show, we would love to have that. And we would find out ahead of time whether or not he wants us to wow him or not. And if he does, awesome. And if he doesn't, it will never happen. But if he wants to swing by and chat with us, we would love to have him.
Exactly.
We will talk.
A person who has a friend who knows somebody, let him know.
We'll bite. We'll basically talk to anybody who's on the show, man. We're friendly that way.
We'll talk to the gaffer.
Yeah. I
mean, just anybody.
Can we get some tape, mister?
Exactly.
All right.
They're bound to have stories.
Yeah, I want to thank you both for wonderful weekly podcast, Kelly Gamont.
Thank you so much. My favorite part of watching the show is getting to come here and nerd out about it with you guys.
Yay. And Don Melton.
And I got to say the same thing. I get so excited by your enthusiasm and so informed by your thoughtful take on things that I did not even consider. I love that.
Oh, man. And I want to thank everybody who listens too. Thanks to everybody. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. I'm Lisa Schmeiser, and all of you can have a great night.